expelled by her university and arrested by the police, tagging in the Prime Minister, Home Secretary, Ofcom, the BBC and Oxford University. In fact, Georgiana was in a team of four which had collectively picked the octopus, as it was one of their favourite animals. The jacket worn by Miss Georgiana on the show was navy, blue, orange, pink and green. Malika Georgiana received death threats and abuse after Baroness Foster smeared her. Foster recently apologised, saying, "I wrongfully alleged that Miss Georgiana chose a blue octopus as her team's mascot, which I held her responsible for. I accept that these allegations were completely false and unfounded. I made a grave mistake in making those posts, and I should not have done so." Naturally, prior to making her racist comments, the Baroness had been on a lobby trip in May 2023 to occupied Palestine, with flights and accommodation paid for by Zionist group Elnet UK. Elnet UK was set up by Joan Ryan, famous for inventing anti-Semitic slurs against Labour Party members, as exposed in the lobby, and by Paul Charney, a former tank commander for the genocidal occupation forces. Foster is also on the senior advisory board of the Drone Delivery Group Limited, a lobby group for the drone industry. As is well known, the occupation forces in Palestine are increasingly making use of drones to more effectively commit genocide in Gaza. But in the end, is a blue octopus actually an anti-Semitic trope? In fact, blue octopi are regularly used by Jewish groups in a positive way, as in this children's book on Oscar the Octopus, and in other examples. Zionist propaganda is increasingly overreaching and overheating. More and more people are becoming instinctively resistant to it. It remains to be seen how long it will continue to be deployed to any effect by the Zionists.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyn University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. And I'm pleased to welcome back Steve Headley as our guest contributor today, and I spoke to him earlier via Skype. Steve is a lifelong socialist and trade unionist who was the Senior Assistant General Secretary of the RMT Trade Union until quite recently. He's also been an anti-racist pro-Palestinian activist all his adult life. His book, Derry Boy, was published in January and quickly sold out at his book launch at the Bookmarks Bookshop in central London. Welcome to the show. David, why on earth do these senior politicians believe these fairy tales? I like the idea that the blue octopus is got some inherent anti-Jewish meaning. It's absolutely preposterous, isn't it?
Well, it is preposterous, and we should treat it with the derision it deserves. It doesn't deserve any proper analysis. It's just a joke. I mean, these people are just jokers. But the people who believe it are people who either are paid-up Zionists or have been convinced by paid-up Zionists that this is the case. And the Zionists will give them pictures of octopus, like this lovely Hanukkah octopus Oscar here.
Yes.
And they will say, actually, this was used by the Nazis, and therefore any representation of a blue octopus must be anti-Semitic, except, of course, the ones which are not anti-Semitic. And it's used quite widely in Jewish folklore, in Hanukkah illustrations, as a pro-Jewish thing. So it's completely ridiculous, and it's used just to weaponize anything that can be weaponized against those who criticize Zionism.
Yeah. Well, I started by asking Steve about the hysteria being generated to vilify opposition to the Gaza genocide, like the ludicrous complaints against the University Challenge students' mascot and jacket.
Well, I mean, it's quite obvious to anybody with a brain cell why she was targeted, and that's because of her ethnicity. I mean, she was a brown person, and brown people are anything they wear can be interpreted, it seems these days, as either in support of Palestine or as somehow anti-Semitic. And I think that this is an agenda for all the Zionists to try to close down any debate and any criticism, to frighten people, to freeze people in the submission. And I think it's backfiring badly, because people are not being intimidated. They're out in the streets, and the people are wearing Palestinian colours very proudly.
David, Latifa's report there said that Baroness Foster's involved with this obscure British Israel lobby group, Elnet. What more can you tell us about them?
So ELNET is a European leadership network, and it was set up in Brussels. It's been one of the key Brussels Israel lobby groups for some years now, but they recently set up a British branch, which is created by Joan Ryan, who famously, from the lobby programme, famously invented anti-Semitic abuse against her.
Yeah. And of course, by Labour MP, of course.
Former Labour MP, and of course, this guy called Charney, who's been involved in a whole range of Zionist organisations, former IDF tank commander. And his function is, as with all Israel lobby groups, is to radicalise and propagandise decision makers. And of course, that's why they've taken decision makers from Parliament to occupied Palestine, including this woman who went on a trip last year, I think it was.
Yes.
And so, I mean, that's what these organisations are for. They're there to make sure that decision makers in the House of Lords or the House of Commons who are not already signed up to Zionism can be turned to become fanatical pro-Zionists.
Right. Well, the young woman on the university challenge was singled out specifically because was visibly Muslim. So I asked Steve for his thoughts on this deeply disturbing trend in Zionist messaging.
Yes, it is. I mean, I think the Zionists weren't expecting the absolute backlash to the genocide in Gaza. Not only Muslims, but 70%, over 70% of the British population, the entire British population, regardless of religion or ethnicity, want to stop to this genocide. They want an immediate ceasefire. But the people that the Zionists are targeting in order to build a profile of somehow violent or extreme elements is the Muslim population, and it's completely untrue. I mean, I've personally been on every demonstration. I've seen very, very little violence at all. The main violence that I saw was from members of the English Defence League who had been summoned to a counter demonstration by Tommy Robinson, but that by and large, their marches have passed off without incident. So again, I think their strategy has been ineffective.
Well, as I was saying, David, I mean, the Zionist lobby's really lost the plot on this one, haven't they? I mean, Latifa's report highlighted that the Blue Octopus, and I think you were just making the point actually, is actually a Jewish-friendly image. I mean, how much more ridiculous can these characters get?
Well, they've overreached, right? They overreached in this case where they lost the libel action. And actually, the solicitors who took the case for this young Muslim student were the same solicitors who won my case in the tribunal. So, from Zilla Rahman and Zach Samur from 11PKBW. So they've taken this case and they've shown that actually you can't just say any old nonsense about people and expect to get away with it. So they've won in this case. Now, in examples like this, here's another happy blue octopus. This is an image from a garment which is being sold on Amazon. Not in any sense anti-Semitic, obviously. But yet, nevertheless, whenever they can try and find a way to, however circuitously, to link a particular image to anti-Jewish hatred, they will take it because, of course, they are desperate to find ways to criticise and to destroy those of us who are pro-Palestinian because that's what's happening. They're creating genocide in Gaza, and they have to find a way to fight back.
And particularly targeting Muslims, as we've seen. Well, I then asked Steve about Baroness Foster's involvement in the deadly drone industry and what that tells us about the values of many of those who are currently engaged in British public life.
Well, I think when we've got Zionists and admitted Zionists who are in lobby groups with Israel, and are also members of the House of Lords or Baronesses, and they're involved in drones that are being used to kill people in Palestine, innocent people in Palestine. We have to ask, who is running politics in this country? Have we got a foreign country in the shape of Israel interfering in politics in this country? We have to look at the Israeli lobby and who they're funding in Parliament, in the House of Lords and in the House of Commons. Because if this was Russian influence, for example, there would be a whole hue and cry about it. There would be an investigation. But it seems to be accepted that the Israeli lobby can sponsor MPs, giving them huge sums of money, foster lords and give them huge sums of money, and absolutely nothing is said.
Well, it's time for our next report now, and then we'll come back to the discussion. This one outlines some of the other farcical examples of Zionist hyperbole.
Hissing is now apparently anti-Semitic too. On the 29th of February, the latest Zionist overreach claimed that hissing at a council meeting in Newham, East London, was an act of anti-Semitism, since snakes, which are among those creatures that hiss, have been used in anti-Jewish propaganda. Three socialist activists were later arrested at midnight for racial harassment under the Public Order Act in a shameful misuse of police time and resources. They deny any hissing. The councillor, Josh Garfield, denounced the alleged hissing as an attempt to bully him out of public life as a result of his ethnicity. The pathetic level of the victimhood is astonishing. The alleged hissing is audible for no more than 3 seconds, and then there is Garfield's response.
If members in the gallery want to hiss me, they might wish to speak to my face about the issues they have. But, Chair, I won't accept it.
I'm going to adjourn the meeting for 15 minutes.
Garfield is, of course, a card-carrying Zionist, being a member of the national executive of the racist Jewish labor movement, which is formally affiliated to the Zionist movement. The mayor of Newham, Roxana Fayaz, who is a Muslim, issued a strong statement the next day, nonsensically referring to anti-Semitic abuse. Across the ages, tropes like the use of snakes have been used to fuel stereotypes, prejudice, and discrimination against Jewish people. Why would Fayaz say that? Maybe it was her attendance the day before the council session at the annual dinner of the Community Security Trust, the group which runs point for the genocidal Zionist regime. In a speech at the council meeting before the alleged incident, she specifically raised comments by the Prime Minister there about the alleged increase in violence and intimidation against elected representatives.
Last night, I was with members of the Jewish community over at the Community Security Trust event in central London. The Prime Minister was there, and he did speak about something that resonated with me. He spoke about the significant increase in violence and intimidatory behaviour being faced by elected representatives.
Alternatively, part of the reason might be the advisory role in a Zionist lobby group, the European Institute for the Study of Contemporary Antisemitism. Among the directors of EISCA were Chairman Stephen Pollard, who later presided over a record-breaking run of falsehood at the Jewish Chronicle, Jeremy Newmark, later disgraced in a scandal over missing cash from the Jewish Leadership Council, and Dennis McShane, a former Labour MP jailed for expenses fraud. Among the other members of the advisory board were a who's who of Islamophobes and or extremist Zionists, including Michael Wine of the Community Security Trust. Back in 2009, EICSA were denounced as a dubious body involved in the sad politicizing of anti-Semitism by Tony Lehrman, the leading authority on the political uses of anti-Semitism. The trope bandwagon will continue rolling until it's brought to a halt by a collective refusal to take seriously the genocidal nonsense spouted by Zionists.
Well, Steve was an eyewitness to the so-called Newham Snakegate rumpus, so I asked him to describe what happened and what the atmosphere was like when the Zionist councillor claimed that he'd been subjected to anti-Semitic hissing.
Yeah, well, first of all, we went as members of the Trades Council, the Trade Union Council down in Newham to oppose £17 million worth of cuts to the budget, which would meant destroying the special educational needs budget, redundancies, and the decimation of services right across Newham. So everybody from the Labour Party who went up to defend the cuts got heckled. I mean, there were a few choice comments made. Now, this so-called hissing, I didn't hear it. Then on the night I didn't hear it, I was sitting right beside one of the persons accused and right behind one of the other persons accused. I was sitting about 4 paces or 5 paces from the third person who was accused, and I will tell you now, absolutely none of them hissed whatsoever. They did not hiss. But the atmosphere in the place was, critical of the Labour Party. Then we had the mayor, Roxana Fiaz, who opened the meeting by giving a statement of how she'd met Rishi Sunak and how her and Rishi Sunak were completely opposed to intimidating political opponents, and we can't have people criticised. We can't have politicians criticised in a way that would upset them. And she kind of set the scene for this guy who came on called Garfield, and he came up to the rostrum and he turned around and said, can people stop hissing behind my back? And we all looked at each other and went, what's he on about? No one's hissing. Certainly we couldn't hear any hissing from where we were sitting. And then the chair of the meeting shut the meeting down, and somehow this hissing that I couldn't hear was interpreted as anti-Semitic in some way. Now, I have no idea how this interpretation was reached. I didn't even know the guy's name at the time. I didn't know his religion. I didn't know anything about him. But even if people were hissing, why would it be anti-Semitic? I mean, couldn't it just be like the Barry coming on in a program, in a theatre even, when people would hiss? He's about to make £17 million worth of cuts. Maybe people would have hissed. How would they know his religion? How would they possibly know his religion? And I think it's a sort of trope that can be turned the other way. Why would people hiss at Jewish people? I don't understand it. And what is that trope all about? So the atmosphere that night, I believe, was if you like, a setup. I think people reacted at the first opportunity to anything that they could interpret as anti-Semitic, and used it to try and sully the name of not only the trade union protesters, but the independent councillors that were present as well.
Well, David, I mean, do we know if this councillor Garfield character has ever been involved in any phony anti-Semitism incidents in the past?
Oh, yes, indeed, Chris, we do. He's been involved in all sorts of phony anti-Semitism incidents in the past. He was a participant in the Panorama programme, Is Labour Anti-Semitic?, when he couldn't even come up with an anti-Semitic allegation. He said that he was sometimes called a dirty Zionist, as if that was in some way anti-Jewish. And, of course, he's previously denounced Momentum in the local area as being anti-Semitic, without producing any evidence. He has a long, long history of this. If you go back to some years before that, he's, of course, been involved with radicalising young kids in Zionist summer camps and the usual sorts of connections that these kind of people have. He's in the Jewish Labour Movement, yeah, on the national executive of that organisation. So, yeah, he's making a career. He's not even 30, and he's making a career out of fake anti-Semitism allegations.
Right. Well, I then asked Steve about the background of the three socialists who were targeted in this incident.
Yeah, there are three members of our Trades Council. There are three active trade unionists. I think they're also members of the Palestinian Solidarity Committee, but that's not the reason that they were there that night. So why they would think it was those three particular people and not anybody else? I mean, I wasn't cautioned for hissing, or I had the police coming around my house to say that it was hissing, and I was sitting right beside one of them. So how could they distinguish it from being him and not me? It made this alleged hissing noise. It's just bizarre. It doesn't make sense. So I think, again, there's an element of people who have been active on the issue of Palestine, active in opposing the genocide, have been singled out because of their political activities, and they're trying to be silenced.
David, the elected mayor in Newham's got some history with Islamophobic Zionist lobby groups, doesn't she?
She has. I mean, she has been involved for a long time in the area of extremism and radicalisation, and she was involved with this anti-Muslim, anti-Semitism group where she was on the advisory board. Then she became the chief executive officer of an interfaith group dedicated to undermining Muslim opposition to British imperialism and to wars. And then she was, the chief executive of another organisation, which is run by a guy who's a personal friend of Benjamin Netanyahu. So right. She has a long history of involvement with Zionism and with Zionist interfaith groups. So it's not surprising that she would make this kind of statement, which she made in Newham, to back up Garfield's nonsense about snakes.
Well, I also asked Steve whether he thought the police were targeting these pro-Palestine activists, or whether the mayor was to blame, and whether he thought this was a colossal waste of police time.
I think that the names of these individuals were given to the police by the councillors in the hall, or perhaps the mayor. I don't know which of them did it, perhaps both. But there's no way that the police would have known who these people were if the Labour councillors and the mayor hadn't pointed them out. And I can reiterate, and I will go to court and swear this, I heard no hissing whatsoever, and certainly there was no hissing coming from the person beside me, the person in front of me, or the person just off to my left. I just think we're in a very dangerous time where the opposition to the war in Gaza is growing in strength. And I think that the government and the Labour Party want to defuse that opposition. And I think that there's no lie or slander that they won't use in order to make out that people are somehow violent or anti-Semitic or otherwise behaving improperly. And, you know, it's just not true. And Labour have to understand that their policy is very unpopular. The government's policy is very unpopular. Most Labour supporters, the vast majority of Labour supporters, want a ceasefire now. And Labour are not delivering that. And they will pay. They will pay at the ballot box. People will not vote for them. And I hope that people will vote for candidates that are demanding peace in Palestine.
David, what would you advise people who are caught up in these Orwellian situations like this?
What happens when people are caught up in these situations usually is that they are surprised by what's happened because, of course, they've not done anything wrong. They're usually anti-racists. Indeed. They've not been anti-Semitic. And they don't understand that this is something serious. And they sort of think that it can go away or you can try and discuss it with people and it will be fine. But it won't be fine. This is an all-out attack, in this case, on people from the left. But usually it's on people who are Palestinian or Arab or Muslim of origin, and they deliberately target Muslims for this kind of activity. You need to get advice swiftly. Don't speak to anyone else until you've got advice, preferably from a lawyer, but from comrades, trusted people who understand these kinds of things. Don't take the route of saying, I'll apologise and go away.
Because
as I know, that never works.
It's weaponised, actually.
It's weaponised. So you need to make sure that you've got proper advice and that you can take on these people so that you can get involved in the processes which can fight back against them.
No, indeed.
As, of course, you've
absolutely. Well, look, I mean, the apology is weaponised, as I say. And they then use, well, he must have known he's done something wrong, and then that gives them licence then to go further. Well, anyway, that's it now for another show. So thank you. And thanks, obviously, to our guest, Steve Headley, and our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Palestine Declassified will be back next week with more forensic investigations and analysis. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulema's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i, Please stay tuned.
ماه رمضان آغاز سال تربیتی است.
The holy month of Ramadan is the beginning of training year. We have different types of years: solar year, lunar year, year of homes, etc. The solar year starts with the spring season. The lunar year starts with the month of Muharram. January is the first month of the Gregorian calendar. Also, the start of the year for paying homes might be different among the people. However, we read in Hadith that the start of the training or self-cultivation year is the holy month of Ramadan. Ramadan is the beginning of the year for reformation and spiritual development. Similar to the nature which becomes new and young in the spring season, human's spiritual state becomes new and renovated by the start of the holy month of Ramadan. Also, it is similar to the year of homes, which cleans the income and earnings from impurities. All in all, the holy month of Ramadan is a new start for those who want to have a new start in their religious and spiritual life. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. The Israeli military has restricted the delivery of humanitarian aid to northern Gaza for weeks, and thousands of Palestinian children are currently going without adequate food and medication. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The United States' controversial decision to pause its funding for the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, earlier this year is reportedly likely to become permanent. Reuters carried out the report on Wednesday, 13th of March, attributing the likelihood to opposition at Congress to the country's financial contribution to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA. UNRWA provides healthcare, education, and other vital services to the Palestinian population in Gaza. The agency was accused by Israel in January of having links to a 7th of October operation launched by Gaza Strip's Palestinian resistance movements against the occupying regime in response to the intensification of Tel Aviv's decades-long crimes against Palestinians. The allegations prompted more than 10 donor countries, including the United States, Germany, the European Union, Canada, and Japan, to suspend all financial support of UNRWA. The funding from these countries used to make up the bulk of the funding received by the agency. The collective move against UNRWA came amid mass displacement and approaching all-out famine across Gaza, prompted by an ongoing genocidal war that the Israeli regime has been waging against the coastal sliver in response to the 7th of October surprise operation by the resistance in Gaza. According to the Reuters report, the bipartisan opposition in Congress to funding UNRWA makes it unlikely the United States will resume regular donations to UNRWA anytime soon, even as countries such as Sweden and Canada have said they will restart their contributions to UNRWA. A supplemental funding bill in the U.S. Congress that includes military aid to Israel and Ukraine contains a provision that would block UNRWA from receiving funds if it becomes law, adding, U.S. President Joe Biden's administration supports the bill. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller told reporters on Tuesday, 13th of March, "We have to plan for the fact that Congress may make that pause permanent." Reuters report added, "Any new funding would need the support of at least some Republicans in Congress, who hold a majority in the House of Representatives. Many have expressed their opposition to UNRWA." It cited a statement by Representative Brian Mast, the Republican chair of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Oversight and Accountability, one of the opponents as alleging that UNRWA is a front. Brian Mast claimed, "It masquerades as a relief organization whilst building the infrastructure to support Hamas." Back in February, the United Nations agency UNRWA said some of its employees had been tortured by the Israeli regime to falsely admit that the agency has ties with Hamas and its retaliatory operation last October. The assertion made in a February report by UNRWA detailed various cases of mistreatment in Israeli detention centers against Palestinians, including several Palestinians who worked for UNRWA. The document said several UNRWA Palestinian staffers had been detained by the Israeli occupation army in Gaza, and that the ill treatment and abuse that said they had experienced include severe physical beatings, waterboarding, and threats of harm to their family members. The report said UNRWA staff members have been subject to threats and coercion by the Israeli authorities whilst in Israeli detention, and pressure to make false statements against the agency, including that the agency has affiliations with Hamas, and that UNRWA staff members took part in the 7th of October 2023 operation. The website of the Mehr News Agency has also covered this same story and tells us more. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has rejected a statement by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, about aid supplies to the Gaza Strip, saying it is a declaration of the international community's failure. The resistance group made the remark on Wednesday, 13th of March, after UNRWA said there is no international will to bring aid into Gaza in light of the widespread and expanding famine in the besieged territory. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said this is a declaration of failure for the international community and the United Nations, and submission to the policies of genocide carried out by the Israeli regime against our Palestinian people. It further called on all active parties to take immediate action to force the Israeli regime to open all land crossings with the Gaza Strip, particularly the Rafah and Kerem Shalom border crossings. The group also emphasized the need to address the security of emergency food supplies, which threatens hundreds of children with death. After the death toll of children due to malnutrition and dehydration reached approximately 30. The Israeli military has restricted the delivery of humanitarian supplies and aid to northern Gaza Strip for weeks, and thousands of Palestinian children are currently going without adequate food and medication. The prevention of aid convoys comes as humanitarian officials have already issued a dire warning stating that unless a ceasefire is implemented and aid is significantly increased in the Gaza Strip, the toll of malnutrition and disease is expected to rise, leading to an alarming loss of lives. Hunger has become the most pressing issue, with myriad problems facing millions of displaced Palestinians in Gaza, with aid trucks only able to bring in a small fraction of what is needed and distributed unevenly due to chaos in the territory. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based human rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to devastating Israeli war on the territory, and the Israeli regime's method of using starvation and hunger as a weapon of war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor conducted an analytical study on a sample of 1,200 people in the Gaza Strip. A high proportion of those who took part in the study admitted that they ate insufficient amounts of food. 64% admitted that they ate grass. And also many people admitted that they had eaten expired food products.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and teenagers, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed light on this important subject. Salaamu alaikum, Sister Salma. Thank you for joining us today.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for being here. In the previous episode, we were talking about what role religion has to play in shaping the personality of our youth. And you gave us some very good practical points, some of which were, you know, life becomes meaningless without religion, and the youth and everybody tend to waste time more without, if they don't have something, you know, to kind of hold them, to kind of show them the path. Bad manners are formed, individuality is lost, and personality fades. And, you know, also talking about how at this moment is when we need people to turn to, we need something to show us the path, you know, and that's where Islam's role is kind of brought into light.
Yes, that's true. So we also should bear in mind that one of the things that personality forms is that identity of a person. The person should know themselves, where they are from, where they will return, whom they came from, where they came from, you know. So this identity crisis is solved by Islam. According to one psychologist, he said the identity that a young person seeks to encounter is, who am I?
Yeah.
What role do I play in the society? Am I a child or an adult? All this, you know, religion gives us so clear answers about it, right?
Yeah.
Young people have many questions to the nature of the world, their relationship to the world, what they should contribute to the world, the purpose of this creation and this life. They have so many questions. Why am I? A person gets fed up. A youth, you know, with the monotony of life, would get fed up and say that, oh, what's the use? I'm coming, even if it is successful, but if he doesn't have religion, you get fed up of the monotony.
Then what?
Yeah. Exactly. After that, what? So, the purpose and the creation of life, there's a purpose and end purpose. You're doing everything, what? In the way of Allah. Qurbatan ilallah is what we are told to do. Everything in our life, even if it be very simple things. The best way of life and choosing values and beliefs is only in, for example, Islam. So this will, all these questions contribute to the formation of a young person's identity. And he searches for some criteria for judging his and others' behavior. Like he's searching that what is good behavior and what is bad behavior. You know, in Islam we have such absolute goodness. We don't have relative. Sometimes this, sometimes that. So this really gives a satisfaction to a youth when he knows religion. So this is brought to attention that how tarbiyat e-aulad is important, right? When you bring your children into good Muslims, then they come to realize and differentiate good and bad when they come of age, and then they do their things with ma'rifah, with, you know, like knowledge, deep knowledge, understanding. That's the time it shapes their personality in a good way.
Exactly. So we'll just take a short break and we'll pick up shortly from that.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we were just discussing about what role religion has to play in shaping the personality of our youth. And we were just discussing about how identity is one of the most important things in our lives.
So at this stage, religion plays a very effective role, and it invites men towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That is the origin of perfection. Man arafa nafsa فَقَدْ عَرَفَ رَبَّهُ. When he knows himself, you know, that identity crisis has gone away now. He knows himself, where he came from, what's his purpose in life, why was he created, what role he has to play in the society, in the family, is it useless or does it have an aim and purpose? Is it like, for, should he have hope for doing this or anything that he does? So then he will come to know about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who is the origin of perfection. And that's the time it'll form his personality, when he knows the origin of perfection and that he can also get those attributes of perfection. Personality is formed through those perfection qualities, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Good personality. Because we don't say that he has a bad personality, not as much as we say that he has such a great personality, right?
Yeah.
So it grants him stability and peace of mind and prevents him from perplexity. It gives him a sense of motivation in everything he does. So whatever one does is not useless or not counted. It's everything that is counted. You know, Allah puts it in the records of his book.
Definitely.
That whatever he's done is in the way of Allah. It's qurbatan ilallah. And that's why whatever niyat we should have, especially in the time of wajibat, should be qurbatan ilallah, to take you close to Allah.
Exactly, and I think we can see this very clearly, especially in what's happening in Palestine, where people and children, youth, all, everybody of all ages, they have this hope, they have this drive, where they're saying, you know, Allah is there for us, He is enough for us. Kind of feeling this peace in their hearts that they know there is somebody watching them, they know there is somebody who is there for them, they know they have somebody to turn to. This realization, I feel, is so necessary. Imagine if in all of that, in all of those trials, they have nobody to turn to.
That's right.
It's so difficult.
Yeah. So here we talk mostly about that aspect of your ideology, your belief about yourself, the ideas you have about why you were brought up, you know, why you were brought in this earth, then your knowledge towards Allah, your aqidah is formed. And then your personality can be shaped in a better way. When it talks about iman and amal salih, now we are talking about amal salih, the virtues, the actions that you do, how does that shape the personality? That amal salih itself means balanced character. It shapes your personality in such a way that you don't have any extreme in your side, nor do you have any negligent in your side. It's the way Imam Ali expresses, you know, the side of Sirat-e-Mustaqim. Sirat-e-Mustaqim is not going wayward in both paths of extreme or negligence. So when a person has a balanced personality, a proper personality, he will never do something that is extreme or never neglect something.
Yeah.
Be it every corner of the life. Like the Holy Prophet, you know, divided his time into four or three portions. Some say four, some say three. Like two for himself, to take care of his good grooming, you know. And that's very natural, right? Another part for the society, the people, to engage in halal conversation, to make them feel happy, to see what their problems were. Another one for his family, and another one for ibadat. That was, of course, the foremost.
Yeah.
But everything has its proper place. So that's like a balanced personality. So religion gives you all that, you see. Other religions make you, you know, adhere to the principles that are completely illogical or want you to worship more than what is the required amount. But here everything is balanced. It shapes your personality in such a beautiful way that, you know, you're not even taken wrongly when other people see you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have time for every moment that is halal.
Very
for you.
True. Yeah. So we're just going to take a quick break and we'll pick up from this.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we were just talking about what role religion of Islam has to play in shaping the personality of our youth. And you just, you know, mentioned how religion invites us to Allah. It kind of grants us this stability and this peace. And it makes us realize that our actions are what shape our personality. And therefore, you know, don't be extreme nor negligent, you know, try to have a balanced life. And we have people who show us that it's possible to be such.
Yeah. Islam also lays a lot of emphasis on the family. Family life is very important. Why? It's because that family, when it is formed in the right way, with choosing the right, selecting the right spouse for yourself, for oneself, will form individuals that could be leaders of the society.
Yeah.
So this is an influential factor in the development of man's personality. To look at the family, the lineage of the person, the criteria that you're looking for to get a spouse, all these are very important to form a child with personality. In addition to that, Islam lays a lot of emphasis on the society. Society and also one's willpower. When we look at all these things like the family, the society and the willpower, the determination that a person should have, that forms a person's true personality and a strong personality. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in one of his letters to his son, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, writes that adolescent's heart resembles an empty land that accepts any seed it is sowed with. Therefore, before your heart is hardened and your brain is trapped, I have taught you good manners so that you can embark on your tasks resolutely. Tasks that experienced people endured their hardships and you have been spared the ordeal of experiencing them again.
Wow, that's actually very beautiful.
The only elements that grant men security and form the strong personality in himself is and releases him from all anxieties is the remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that is so much emphasized in religion. Like the Holy Quran says that Allah bi dhikrillah tatma'innul qulub, verily in the remembrance of Allah do the hearts find rest. So a personality that is balanced will not be over anxious, depressed. Apart from the knowledge of Allah, the religion points out to the fact that in life there are so many hurdles that you have to pass. And the best thing to overtake those hurdles is the remembrance of Allah. And that's why Allah bi dhikrillah tatma'innul qulub. In this regard, our Iranian leader Ayatollah Khamenei has said, attention to and love for Allah gives meaning to man's life. It bridges his mental gaps and brings him success in all aspects. This is pointing out a very strong personality.
Yeah.
The reason why in some countries such as United States, aspects such as money, military power and even knowledge cannot bring about happiness and psychological problems step from alienation from God and spirituality.
Yeah.
So when you alienate yourself from religion, which teaches you the true meaning of what God is, which is full of perfection, and the true role models, the awliya, and how true spirituality should be, and how one is free from any anxiety if he adheres to God and remembers Allah, then only one can have that nature of a very strong personality. And this shows what a great role religion has to play to shape the personality, especially in the ripe age of youth.
Ahsan. So that was very, very insightful. And thank you very much for your valuable time, Sister Salma. And we hope to see you in the next episode. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening. You've just listened to IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing. And if you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI. Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can email us on englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.